On Community Connections, it's time for this week's star interview.
Our star guest today was born and brought up in Middlesbrough. He studied piano for 14 years before taking a degree in music theatre at York University. He then came down here to the West Country and studied for 2 years at the Bristol Old Vic. He's now settled in Bristol, and that's where he joins us from. John Telfer, welcome to Community Connections and Read on the Radio.
Thank you, Andrew.
Your voice will be known by millions, your face will be known by millions, but perhaps your number one role that most of us will remember you for is playing Bergerac's sidekick, Willie Pettit, in Bergerac alongside John Nettles. You've done a lot before then, you've done a lot since, but is that a character that still holds special affection for you?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, it was my my major, major big television role, really. I mean, I'd done quite a few sort of one-off plays and things on television. I'd been a presenter. People of a certain age will remember an ITV program called Let's Pretend, which is the sort of the ITV equivalent of Play School. And I was one of the presenters on Let's Pretend, along with many other chums. And that was for about 5 years in the 80s, from about 82 to 87. And then in 87, Bergerac came along. And I was lucky enough to get picked to join that programme and had 4 very happy years.
Tell me, when you got that role, which obviously was a big role to land, you were going into a series that was already very well loved. And I guess there's a certain legacy that you have to protect when you go into a series like that.
Yeah, very aware of that. It was nice that we had, I already worked with Annette Badland. She was a secretary in the Bureau des Etrangers. And John was very welcoming. John Nettles is a wonderful and lovely, lovely man. You won't hear a single person in our business have a bad word to say about him. He's nothing but sort of welcoming, generous-spirited, generous-hearted, generous in every way, helpful to young actors. So yes, it was quite nice. No one had told John because there was a layoff in 1986, I think, when they didn't shoot any Bergerac. So there was a new producer in 1987 who hired me and another actor called David Kershaw. And he played Ben Lomas. He was we were the sidekicks. And no one had told John that there were two new young people on the show with him. You know, I suppose he wondered where Jeff Leasley and Jolyon, who played the other sidekicks, were on the first ep. But he just was very, very welcoming. And we just sort of slotted in, really. We slotted in to the feel of the show and whatever. We had to make up our own, it was a bit sort of make up your own background, really, because we weren't given any brief as either of us as to where we'd come from. Pettit is actually a Jersey name, although we thought that the Willie Pettit was probably the producer's little joke. But Pettit is a Jersey name, but we decided that we'd both come over, as people do, from the London Met. And so we were both, you know, Londoners, basically. So Willie Pettit was a Londoner, and so was Ben Lomas, a Londoner. And we sort of made up the fact that, you know, that I was a bit sort of wild and he was a bit sort of closed off and sort of sensible. And that we developed that ourselves, and that sort of, you know.
I did think at the time, actually, that Ben and Willie could have had a spin-off series. That could have been quite interesting.
There's some interested party. There was a party of fans somewhere who had the Willie and Ben club. And they sent me a little sort of homemade badge. It was fantastic. I mean, you going in to shoot and normally in some lovely house somewhere at 6 o'clock in the morning, going into the makeup wagon and going through the lines for the day with John. And, you know, and at lunchtime, John might say, oh, come on, you know, we've had our lunch, go and have a swim. And we just go down to the nearest bay and get into our togs and throw ourselves into the sea. It's fantastic.
Oh, it
Great.
sounds a hard life, John. It really does.
It was a tough life. Someone had to do it.
John, let's go back to the beginning because you've had such an interesting career in show business and you were playing the piano many, many years before you even stepped on the stage.
I started piano lessons at the age of at the age of 7. My father played by ear, so he'd always played the piano by ear, and he was actually jolly good, and he loved his music. He was what you call light classics. I mean, Gilbert and Sullivan and Eine kleine Nacht music was about his thing, you know. I don't want to sound disparaging, but it was my brother, who was 12 years older than me, joined the Merchant Navy instead of being conscripted into the army in those days. You see how old I am. And he came back when I was about 4 or 5. He came back from America with two albums, two special albums, no, three albums. One was Johnny Cash's first album. The other one was Fats Domino Rockin' and Rolling album. And the other one was Beethoven's Violin Concerto, which had never been played in the house. And I almost, by the time I was about 7 or 8, I knew every note of that. So I don't know really why I didn't become a violinist. But you know, I used to I, a family friend we used to visit in Hemel Hempstead, in Boxmoor in Hertfordshire near Hemel Hempstead, and we used to he was a music buff, and we used to walk his dog over the moor at, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. Those are the days. And we would sing Beethoven's violin concerto to each other. I'd do the lead violin part, and he'd do the orchestra, you know. So and he said to my dad, he said, "You've got to get this boy trained. You've got to get this boy music trained." Anyways, he sent me for piano lessons, and I did all my grades and passed my grade 8 at 15. And I mean, I was, you know, I was the sort of the musician of the school, really, of my grammar school. And then there was my wonderful English teacher, young John Foggin, who died sadly a couple of years ago, became a great friend while I was at school. And he directed me, first of all, in Jean-Anouilh's The Lark, and then cast me as Dr. Faustus, did a production of Dr. Faustus. So I was already, by the time I went to university, I went to York University, I was already not only studying piano with an Austrian pianist called Otto Grünfeld, but I was also just in the drama society. You know, I played Pericles, I played Macbeth, rather terribly, actually, I have to say. My Macbeth was awful. And then one of my mates at the university was a Bristolian called Graham Callan, and he said, "I'm going to apply to Bristol-Old Vic Theatre School." And I said, "Well, I think that's a jolly sounds like a jolly good idea, and I'll do the same thing." So came down to Bristol, and really, I mean, ever since I've been doing what I did at university, playing music, writing music, playing in a band, and acting on stage, you know, that's more or less what I did at university while doing my work, and that's what I'm doing now.
Do you think that having many strings to your bow is the secret between one, not being typecast, and two, frankly, not getting bored?
Well, it's certainly helped in terms of work. I've never had to sort of, you know, work in a pub or an office or something to keep the money coming in, keep yourself off the streets and trouble and things, because when I haven't been either working in television or radio or whatever, I was either teaching at the theatre school in Bristol. I kept going back year in, year out to train up and coming students as I'd been trained. So I was doing sort of text projects, what we call text projects, sort of little cut down versions of major pieces of theatre, or in latter years, a mu visiting musical director. So, you know, I would adapt pieces of music for shows, do backing tracks for the students, go and teach them the notes and things like that, along with the regular staff. So I was always either doing that. I wrote music for theatre for many years. When I was a young actor at the Bristol Old Vic, Richard Cottrell took me on and right from theatre school. And I was writing music for shows while I was actually in them as well. And so I kept doing that. Wrote shows. I've done shows for Birmingham and stuff like that with when Bill Pride was there. Bill Pride was a fellow student at university, and we took the first time York University went up to the Edinburgh Festival. It was with our musical based on Marlowe's Massacre at Paris, if you can believe it, with music by me and words by Bill. I sort of continued doing that, and ended up doing a lot of music for the Shakespeare at the Tobacco Factory company in Bristol, which had a sort of major sort of national focus because the Andrews productions were fantastic. So I used to share the credits with Liz Purnell. She would do sort of half the shows, and I would do half the shows largely, while that company was going. So that was always a great thing. I used to love sort of setting Shakespeare and things. I would always like to do the music in between scenes at the beginning of the show and setting the songs and all that sort of stuff. Lovely. And meanwhile, singing with a Bristol rock band, singing and playing keyboards with a Bristol rock band called A Few Good Men, and then we were called AFGM actually after that. We made four albums, but we're all old gits, so we never got a management deal.
John, there's still time.
There's still time.
Now, as we've said, you starred in one of the 1980s biggest television series. But my listeners, who are very good with voices, may well have also put two and two together to realise that you have also starred in the world's longest running soap opera.
I interviewed for it in 2003. I was moaning and whinging to a friend of mine in Bristol, who's a BBC producer called Alec Reed, who's my dearest friend, very closest friend. We'd worked together in the late 80s, and then wrote a musical together, which was on in London actually in beginning of 2002, I think. I was whinging on. It was nothing happening. No theatre, no television, no radio. And I said, "Oh, I'm fed up." And he said, "Well, I don't think they've cast the Vicar in the Archers yet," because he was an occasional producer for the Archers. He would go to Birmingham and direct shows. So he said, "Why don't you give him a ring?" So I gave him a ring, and they said, "Oh yeah, come along. Here's a script." I went in and chatted to the producer, who was you interview on tape, as it were. So they record you doing a scene with someone who's already in the show, and I was doing my scene with Angela Piper, who played Jennifer Aldridge. So there's a little scene they'd written for the two of us, and the producer said, "Well, we think that the vicar is a widower, and he's got a light North Yorkshire accent." And I said, "Well, that's very handy," I said, "because I come from Northeast Yorkshire, so you can have that if you like. I can talk like that, if you want that sort of thing." She said, "No, thanks. We've got one of those already." So we eschewed the sort of Teesside stroke Geordie, which of course Flick who plays Ruth, and I ended up with a sort of light accent I have. And unfortunately, one of my first daughter like talked like that, so she was right from that area, and she was much broader than I was.
And it has to be said that old Alan, he was a little bit of a ladies' man, wouldn't he?
Well, he there was a the thing is, if you're an unaccompanied male, as it were, and you join the show, they always try and pair you off with someone. And so a thing is, who is Alan going to be paired off with? And there was some thought at the time that it might be Helen Archer. So we had a date in the Archers, but it was Alec, and quite rightly, who suggested that I suggest to them, why not Usha Gupta, the solicitor. They said, mixed race, mixed religion marriage, and that's the one they eventually went for, which I'm very grateful. I mean, if Helen and I had got hitched, as it were, they would never had the Rob Titchener story with the abuse and all that sort of stuff. We did get a bit of I think the company were the BBC were contacted by someone at the Archbishop's office saying, "Do you think this is right that a Church of England vicar is marrying a Hindu?" And the team were able to say, "Actually, we based it on one of your vicars in the south of England who is married to a Hindu." And they went, "Ah, right." And that was the last we heard of it.
John, what are you doing at the moment? Obviously, alongside the work you're doing on the Arches, are you still acting? Are you still singing elsewhere?
I dropped out of I stopped a rock band back in 2012, I think, something like that, because it was just getting it was, my young boys were sort of growing up and I needed to spend more time with my family, as it were. And I do miss that. I do miss going on stage and, standing with the stand microphone and giving it a bit of welly. But I was also directing at the time the Bristol Gilbert and Sullivan Society with Eric Wetherill, dear Eric Wetherill, who's no longer with us, who's the musical director. And when he retired, and I retired with him, I was then able to join the Bristol Choral Society, which I'm in at the moment, with my wife. My wife had already gone to join, because she's a soprano and I'm a tenor. And I auditioned for them and got in. And in fact, we sang the Bach St. John Passion at the Beacon with an orchestra and things, which was hard work. Wonderful, wonderful piece of music, of course. Wonderful, wonderful piece of music. So, I am singing. I'm singing with the Choral Society. I also sing and perform with a Bristol actress and singer, jazz singer called Kate McNab. And I occasionally do shows with Kate as well, but I made a decision some years ago. In fact, when our boys were rather small, in fact very small, in the case of our younger son, it was 1994, and our younger son was literally 2 days old, just being born, when a director, Foz Allen, rang me up and said, "Would you like to play Salieri in Amadeus?" And I said, "Absolutely. Are you kidding? It's like the biggest and most, showy part in the canon, the acting canon, is bigger than King Lear, So I said, "Yeah." So it meant going up to Chester, backwards and forwards for the first 9 weeks of my young son's life. And it's a very showy part, and all right, it was probably the best thing I've ever done on stage, frankly. Manchester Royal Exchange were sniffing around and said, "We'd like you to come and do two shows." And I said, "Look, I can't do it. I've got two young sons, got a 3-year-old and a baby boy. Can't do it." And so I cut myself off completely, really, from touring the country and going away for long periods of time. But I decided then, and family were much more important, and so I got my work mainly in Bristol, mainly around here. But so now, what I do, a lot of what I do a lot of audio books, and I record a lot of them from my home studio, which I've a little set up in my study at home. I work for a company called Isis in Oxford, and they literally send me a book a month, and I've done 330 something like that audio books over the last few years. So I've done quite a lot. I've done the whole of the Saint canon, for instance, with a company called Rushforth, with 49 books or something.
We are coming towards the end of our time, which I'm really, really sorry
What's
about,
that?
because there are so many stories we could talk about. But what I must ask you, we return to Bergerac. We look at that original series based on Jersey, the wonderful countryside. Was it a good idea to do a reboot using the same main character, or should it just have been a completely different series?
I think it was a mistake. I mean, the original, when they were mooting a reboot, originally, John told me that they had plans that he had returned to being an alcoholic, which was the original shtick at the beginning of Bergerac, and was living in a caravan on the beach somewhere in Jersey. And a new head of the Bureau des Etrangers, a woman, would come over to lead the bureau and would consult him on difficult cases, basically. So he would be consulted because he was the local interest. And that was how they would do the show. And in the end, they didn't do that, as you know. I don't know why they do this. Write something new, really. Write something new. Do something new. But John is still fantastic. I saw him a couple of weeks ago. Popped in on our way back from seeing some friends down in Devon. We popped over to see John and Kathy and had lunch with them. And he's still a dear friend and a lovely, lovely man.
John Telfer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. What a pleasure, Andrew. It's been lovely talking to you.